Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, that's great. That sounds terrific. Thank you.
Agenda 21, it would include himself, Terry Hall, and John Bush. Well, I made that happen tonight. So that is our panel tonight, and they're going to explain to us, is Agenda 21 a conspiracy theory or a real threat? Well, first let me tell you who my panelists are. Michael Shaw is a leading critic of sustainable development, also known as the UN's Agenda 21, which is the Action Plan Implementing World Government for the 21st Century. Shaw delivers a powerful presentation, The Ultimate War, Globalism versus America, an expose in which he illustrates the local infiltration of globalist policy in the community in which he is speaking. Shaw leads freedomadvocates.org, which is dedicated to providing news and information on what America stands for and how Agenda 21 is designed to transform America and the human experience. We also have Terry Hall, founder and director of Texans Uniting for Reform and Freedom. She also runs the website TexasTurf.org. And last but not least, we have Mr. John Bush. He's out of the Austin, Texas area. He's a young man who's down there taking on his city council about the effects of Agenda 21. Let me open everyone's phone line. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Center Stage.
Good evening.
Hello.
Are you there, John?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes. Michael, are you there?
I am.
Good
Glad
evening.
To be here. Good evening. It's nice to be with you again.
Well, same here. I'm glad to have you. I asked the question, Agenda 21, conspiracy theory or real threat? We'll open up with you, Michael. Is it a conspiracy theory or have you proven it to be a real threat?
Well, conspiracy is when two people or more get together and plan a crime.
Mm.
Now, a conspiracy theory is that there's a theory that two or more people have gotten together to plan a crime. Now, Agenda 21 is nothing about conspiracy because let's say you and I plan tomorrow to rob a bank and tomorrow comes and we're in the bank and we're holding up the teller. The conspiracy part goes away. Now you've got an actual crime. Well, Agenda 21 isn't a theory. It's a written document. It's been endorsed by 178 nations. So there's no way it can be characterized as either a conspiracy, a plan to do something, or a theory. There it is. Mm-hmm. Our federal government, every agency, is committed in its own words, on its own websites, to Agenda 21 Sustainable Development. That's on the order of the last four presidents of the United States, two Democrats, two Republicans. This is an all-pervasive agenda that is fully endorsed by both political parties. It is endorsed by the players in the monetary system, which means that the people who own the few companies that own our media in this country these days are all controlled by the globalist mentality. They are fully committed to Agenda 21, and they stifle the information about it when it comes to public awareness. Now, that battle is beginning to shift, and that's the good news that we can all report on.
Okay. Terry Hall, where did it come from?
Well, it came from the UN, and so that ought to tell us right there that it's a threat to our freedom. It certainly didn't come from the grassroots in America. And what we're seeing, if you don't mind me launching into how it's touched,
mm-hmm.
the fight and battle that we've had in our grassroots group, it involves these public-private partnerships. Michael, maybe you could go into the three E's first, and then I'll talk about how this one is one of the economy E's and how it wreaks havoc with Agenda 21 in our country.
Well, I mean, that's an appropriate place to start, Terry, as you know, because we've got to have a window into the philosophy that guides the globalist operators and their action plan, which they call Agenda 21. But the three E's are sort of it's a catchy little thing that you learn all about when you major in sustainability when you go to many colleges in America today. And the three E's go like this. The first E is equity. By equity, they mean the use of sociology and changes in the law sort of create the new man. Really, that's talking about creating the new communist man, the one who lives for his community and not in his own interest. This is the philosophical dynamic that drives Agenda 21. The second E has to do with economy. And by economy, they mean the redistribution of America's wealth around the country. Agenda 21 is largely based on the the writings of the Earth Charter. And the Earth Charter is taught in many American schools, but it calls for the domestic and the international redistribution of wealth. And so the American economy has been set up for decades to do precisely that. That's why we don't manufacture in this country. That's why everything's been shipped offshore. It's the international redistribution of America's wealth, coupled with a new economy. We're to get rid of free enterprise and substitute it with public-private partnerships.
Okay.
Well, public-private partnerships are exactly what it was that Benito Mussolini and later Adolf Hitler shaped their economic system around. But just to finish the three E's, the third E is environment, and that's what's used to lure Americans into Agenda 21. Oh, we're saving the environment. But that's not what they mean by environment. They mean the reduction of the human population and putting nature before man, treating man as simply another species.
John Bush, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. How are you?
Fine, how are you? Jump in.
Good.
Is there anything you want to add to what is Agenda 21?
Sure. Yeah, I've, from my examination, which began around 2008 when I saw that the city of Austin was joining the, they created the Austin Climate Protection Plan, and part of it was the point of sale ordinance, which required homes. Originally, it would have required homes, before you could sell your house, you had to get an inspection, and you had to do a whole multitude of upgrades to make your house energy compliant. It managed to get beat down a little bit, so now they only require the inspection, but they still collect all of that information. That's what alerted me about Agenda 21, dug a little bit deeper, but from a lot of my research, I've honed in on three things that Agenda 21 would accomplish if it were to be fully implemented. First of which is, and this is echoed in a lot of Michael's research as well, the first is that it would eliminate private property rights as we know them. The second, it would dramatically alter the moral, social, and political fabric of the United States of America. And the third and most frightening is that they would see a dramatic reduction in the world population to the tune of 80-85%. This is all laid out within their own documents, so many people think it's easy to write off because those things sound so scary and so difficult to fathom, so they think it's a conspiracy theory. But in reality, they write it out there. They're proud of it. They have this imperial social Darwinism type of hubris, and all you got to do is dig right beneath the surface, and you'll find that all of their plans are laid out, and the future that they have planned out for the rest of mankind is definitely not something that I want to play a part of or have my children be brought up in. So there's a lot of people that are standing up, and yeah, what a wonderful panel, Terry Hall and Michael Shaw, and I'm so glad that the grassroots are really picking up on this issue.
Now, Terry Hall can only be with us for the first hour. So, Ms. Hall, tell us what's going on in the San Antonio area.
Well, actually, it's across the whole state, and really it's the country. Texas is the gateway for all of this foreign, quote-unquote, free trade. And so some people may have already heard of this because our governor is throwing his hat in the ring to run for president, but it's just now starting to catch wind by a lot of people about this Trans-Texas Corridor. And I found out about it in 2005, shortly after the development rights contract was handed to a Spanish firm called Cintra. And the more research and digging we did into this project, we could see that it was more than just about a road project. These public-private partnerships, which is what the Trans-Texas Corridor was framed around, that was the framework for how they were going to get this thing funded. Or at least that's how it appeared, that it was about funding. But really this is about open borders, it's about global trade, and it's about really the economic interests of big corporations supplanting those of individual rights and our freedom to travel. So let me just give you an idea, a glimpse, of what this Trans-Texas Corridor would have involved. It was going to be a 4,000-mile network of toll roads that was going to crisscross our state. It was going to take 580,000 acres of private Texas property. Just the first corridor alone was going to displace 1 million Texans. That's a city nearly the size of San Antonio, is how many people would have been displaced from just the first corridor. It was going to be 1,200 feet wide, which is like four football fields end to end. That's how wide this was going to be. And that's why so many called it a land grab, because it's exactly what it is. So when you talk about how Agenda 21 is about taking away our private property rights, the Trans-Texas Corridor was the mother of all property rights abuses, because this was going to put that kind of land, 580,000 acres, in the hands of a private foreign company. Now, the other thing about this is it wasn't going to just be a road. It was going to have power transmission lines, telephone lines, pipelines of all sorts. Really, it was at one point, when you read the original document about the Trans-Texas Corridor, it was about shipping water around the state. It's about shipping power around the state. There's all kinds of wind power going on, as you probably heard from T. Boone Pickens and his pitch for wind power in West Texas. One of the Ports to Plains Trans-Texas Corridors is all about moving that wind power through that corridor to where they want to, you know, move it to. It's also about open borders and the free flow of people and goods. But when you look at what this corridor would have done, if it was 1,200 feet wide, the developer, this Spanish company, only had to put intersections, or overpasses, I should say, where it intersected existing state or federal highways. So just on the first Trans-Texas Corridor route, TTC 35, there would only be five exits in the entire state of Texas. So it's literally a government-sanctioned monopoly being granted to these foreign companies. Even more frightening is they get what's called the appurtenance. The legal definition of that is basically they get the right-of-way surrounding this road. And when it's 1,200 feet wide, that basically gives a wide berth for this foreign company to be able to come in and choose the restaurants, the hotels, the gas stations, everything within that right-of-way. And that is a profit-generating, revenue-generating machine for this captive audience that is on this government-sanctioned monopoly-type toll road. And so it's like Michael was saying, this has nothing to do with free market. This is about monopolies, and it's about big business teaming up with our government and the powers of government to steal our property and really to rip us off. So about the public-private partnerships, there's provisions in these things. We call them sweetheart deals for a reason. And really when you look at the joining of government with big business, we really are looking at corporatism, or really the stronger term is fascism. That's really what they're pushing through this. And this is all part and parcel of Agenda 21. Well, here's how these public-private partnerships are so anti-taxpayer and anti-property rights. They have something called non-compete agreements in them. So it allows these foreign companies to prohibit our state highway department from building or expanding any free roads within a certain mile radius of these foreign-owned toll roads. On one deal that was going down with the same Spanish firm in the Dallas-Fort Worth area for Highway 121, this was happening in 2007. This was in addition to this huge Trans-Texas Corridor. On this public-private partnership, the non-compete zone would have been the entire counties of Collin and Denton counties. These are two of the fastest-growing counties in all the state of Texas, and you weren't going to be able to build any free roads in those two counties for a half century at a time. So these are literally multi-generational contracts that do this. On those particular roads, there's two that have already been signed, these public-private partnerships for some urban toll roads on our existing interstates, which is the LBJ Highway, which is I-635, and another one they're calling the North Tarrant Express, which is primarily Interstate 820. On these two that have already been signed, those toll rates have been published to be at 75 cents a mile when those toll roads open sometime next year.
Wow.
75 cents a mile, folks. Okay, so now you start to see the bigger picture. That's what they want to do in the urban area toll roads. They can't afford, the projected toll rates for the Trans-Texas Corridor were going to be much lower because they were going to go really where there were no major urban centers. And that was the other thing that everybody scratched their head. They're like, why on earth would we build this huge Trans-Texas Corridor essentially through rural Texas, where it doesn't even intersect any major urban centers? So, for instance, if you're trying to get truck traffic through our state, which was one of the excuses, it was all about NAFTA and this free trade coming into our country through the deep water port down in Mexico, Lázaro Cárdenas, on the west coast of Mexico.
Terry, can I
sure.
break in for a minute? I mean, I think that's the key. I think the listener needs to understand that what the Trans-Texas Corridor is simply the linkage from the Texan the Texan-Mexican border and the other states for this international, this continental unification system coming up from central Mexico, meaning that Chinese goods will be unloaded on docks in Mexico, put on this corridor system that's 1,200 feet wide, cross the American border at Corpus Christi. There's no customs. It's a Trojan horse line is what it is. The
yes.
Trojan horse comes into America and docks in Kansas City. That's the first place that the cargo is looked at, and it's looked at by the Mexican government, not by the American government. So what we're doing is granting the globalists this Trojan horse route at the American taxpayers' expense.
That's
double
right.
expense, because Texans already built the freeways, and now Perry wants to sell these freeways to this Spanish corporation, this multinational corporate partner of globalism, so the Texans always have to pay to get on the roads they already paid for in taxes. And Perry calls himself some kind of financial wizard.
Ah, oh my goodness. Let me tell you, if there's anything that John and I especially can communicate to your audience, it's that the last thing you want is Rick Perry as your president. I can tell you that right now. So this free trade and this open borders, huge Trans-Texas Corridor, was all about the free, the free flow of people and goods across our border. We actually have inland ports in the state of Texas now where they don't even have to get all the way to Kansas City to do this. They have an inland port here in San Antonio. They have another one in Dallas-Fort Worth. And there's actually, I believe, one in the Houston area, which is silly because they already have actual ports there as well. But I'll tell you, these public-private partnerships and where it's headed for our state is, when they charge you a toll of 75 cents a mile, especially in these urban areas, the two I was referring to earlier in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, this is about Agenda 21's goal of restricting mobility and restricting travel. They want to herd everybody in to the major cities and make you dependent on mass transit by taxing you out of your car. It's similar to what happened with all of these carbon taxes and things that these bills that have been put out there for several years now, where they there's also a study that was done that by the Obama administration, the Federal Highway Administration, and several other partners in this, they actually put out this report that they wanted to put tolls on every existing road in all of the top 100 American cities, and they were going to charge you 65 cents a mile to get access to any of the inner cities.
But let me think about this. So you're saying the taxpayers picked up the check for cash for clunkers,
right?
And we gave everybody this rebate to buy new cars, and now they're trying to get us out of our cars?
Exactly, it makes no sense. Well, see, if you have the right kind of government deemed green car, well then that's okay, because if it's solar or electric powered, those are okay. But when it comes to the internal combustion engine, the typical car that they call the gas guzzlers, absolutely they want to tax us out of our cars. This is exactly what they've done in Stockholm, Sweden, and in London. They enacted a congestion tax so that you literally have to pay big money to get access to downtown London, and in Sweden it's the same thing.
So
well,
between high gas prices and taxing us out of our cars, we're going to have to get out of them one way or another.
That's what they want. Yeah, absolutely. So the restricting mobility and the abolishing of private property are two things that definitely happen with these public-private partnerships as they pertain to roads and really other infrastructure, too.
What were you saying, Michael?
Well, I'm just suggesting that it is not just the big fat gas guzzlers that they want off the road. What they want is for people to move into their smart growth bastions.
Yeah.
The Trinity River Project up in Fort Worth is an excellent example of that kind of program. And, you just won't have many cars on the Trinity River Project if that gets built out, because what they want is people to be reliant upon public transportation.
Yes.
Okay,
and
let's
so
let's
the price of electricity is going to skyrocket. I'm sorry?
What are smart growth areas?
smart growth areas, Agenda 21 has two land use programs for implementation, particularly focused on America. One of those two land use programs is called smart growth. And what smart growth is the stacking and packing of human beings in densely packed, high-rise or rising cities. These
we see in Japan or somewhere like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Figure like living in Tokyo.
Mm.
Now, the idea is that all people are to be in these smart growth zones. Now, one of the things that is not sustainable under Agenda 21 is single-family housing. In Great Britain, the single-family housing is being taken down. These are things that generations have owned. They're being torn down, and the people are being relocated in government smart growth housing within these urban areas. The idea behind Agenda 21 is that all people, that people really are a cancer upon the earth, and so we're going to put the people in the cages and let the animals roam freely.
But you can't make a comment like that without explaining how are they getting them out of these single-family homes. I mean, so if I had my home for 30 years, under what premise do they come and get me to move?
Well, in Great Britain, it was because the homes weren't properly insulated.
Okay.
They said, well, these homes are too old. They're not properly insulated, so they must be torn down. So it's just by edict these things happen. In America, we always run behind Great Britain in this globalization process. In America, the pressure is on rural landowners. Because let me talk about the second element of the Agenda 21 land use program. It's what's called the Wildlands Network.
Mm-hmm.
The Wildlands Network is to be areas that are recovered to a 15th century ecological condition. It is to be void of human beings, and it is off limits for resource extraction. So what am I really saying here? I'm talking about 50% of the land mass of the United States has been designated under Agenda 21 as being wilderness. No people, no resource extraction. Most of the rest of the United States is a buffer zone to the wildlands, where public-private partnerships will operate in the public interest. Now, in this whole process, population is to be reduced to 1 billion.
Okay, let's pause that. So let's think of in a particular area. Let's just say John Bush up in Austin. John, how are they going to take that from a global situation to a local situation like in your area in Austin?
Yeah, they use all sorts of public incentives and subsidies, public-private partnerships. Their whole plan is a global-to-local plan. They want to circumvent the United States Constitution, the state's constitutions. They like to use a front group. It's a non-governmental organization called the International Council of Local Environmental Initiatives, or ICLEI, which is in just about every major city in the United States of America. And most of all, the way that they kick people out of the homes and that they're closing down rural areas and forcing people into urban areas is through a lot of different market interventions where they'll use public monies and tax breaks, whether it's property tax breaks or they'll come in and install free utilities and give cuts on those. And they'll do that for areas that engage in smart growth programs that have stack 'em and pack 'em, mixed-use development, where you don't need to use your automobile to go to work. You have the corporation you work for is right there down the road with the park and a little commercial area as well. And another thing they do is Terry Hall mentioned the Trans-Texas Corridor originally had a plan to have very few exits. So what happens is whenever a exit gets shut down, a lot of times down the road, these small towns, they lose a lot of their commerce and their tourists or people just driving through or stopping through. Maybe they had a couple motels, and they completely shut down, turn into ghost towns. So really what they're doing is through market intervention, along with Agenda 21 smart growth policies that ultimately will lead to a wildlands project style situation, moving people from rural to urban areas, they are intervening, and making it more difficult. They're doing it in Austin on a micro scale as well, pushing out lower income, economically disadvantaged families from the east side of town. They're directing a lot of smart growth energy there. It's unnatural growth. They throw public money out of it, and then they raise the property tax in the areas around it, and it causes families to have to move out of those areas unless they want to move into the condos and the fancy smart growth developments. So, yeah, those are all Agenda 21 policies. And in Agenda 21, it actually lays that out. It recommends that local governments do this type of things. All you got to do is show up to your city council meetings or your county commissioners meetings, even state government, of course, the federal level as well. But you can just walk in there and you'll see exactly Agenda 21. All you got to do is look for the three E's. They're in all of the comprehensive plans, which is their shadow way of sneaking Agenda 21 in. They even have internal documents where they recommend not using local Agenda 21, which is what they called it back in the mid-90s. Michael Shaw founded Local Agenda 21 Santa Cruz. They say, no, we can't use that term anymore because it'll bring out the conspiracy theorists, it'll bring out militia members, and even some members of Congress. So in order to overcome that, we call it smart growth, comprehensive planning, and city planning. And, yeah, they're subverting it. All you got to do is show up, and you'll be able to see it. And people can actually stand up and throw a wedge in it by demonstrating how un-American, how unconstitutional. It's not representative government. It's violation of the United States Constitution as well. And yeah, communities are standing up. And the first step, of course, is to educate oneself.
Okay. I would also like to add to that. Let's remember that Supreme Court case here in the United States of the Kelo case. Remember, Agenda 21 restricts or takes away your private property rights, and it's through public-private partnership, but it's also through these economic development, redevelopment, and blight initiatives. That's another way that they get you out of your property. They'll come in and use the power of eminent domain to condemn your land like they did to Suzette Kelo, which is what the case was named after, and they wanted to take away these people's older homes. They demolished them and then gave the property to Pfizer, a drug company, because the cities and counties or whomever the entity is can make more money off of a commercial building than they can off of your older home. And it turns out the real crime of Kelo was they kicked these people out, including this older woman who was in her 80s, I believe, and wanted to die in that home. They kicked her out through eminent domain, and the worst thing about it is that Pfizer never even built their building there, never even operated there. So now it literally lies vacant after this huge usurpation of property rights took place in our country. And so we have that in Texas. We have Governor Perry going all over the country telling how he is so strong on property rights and how we have, you know, we've shot down Kelo and we've passed all these great bills. Well, let me tell you what's in those bills. Prior to Rick Perry's hands getting on this, we didn't have any economic development or blight exceptions in our eminent domain laws. Now, on his watch, we actually have in our Texas Constitution the ability of government to come in and take your land in the name of economic development and blight.
And we're going to pause it right there because I want to come back and ask you all, what can the homeowner do? But before we do, we need to make a couple of announcements. If you just tuned in, you come center stage tonight for the topic, Agenda 21, Conspiracy Theory or Real Threat, Part 2. We're talking with Mr. Michael Shaw with freedomadvocates.org and Ms. Terry Hall with texasturf.org and Mr. John Bush. Tonight's segment of Center Stage is being brought to you by African American News and Commentary Blog, your single source for news, events, and commentary that is of unique interest to African Americans. They're located on the web at www.africanamericannewsandcommentary.com. If you're on the phone lines and have a question or a comment, press 1. Or if you're listening in via the Internet, dial us up at 347-850-8390, and again, press 1. A reminder, the chat room is open tonight, so if you have a question or a comment, you can post it up in chat. Please do it in bold, and I will present it to the panel before the end of the hour. Okay, back to land grabs, and for the person who has never heard of Agenda 21 prior to tonight, and they're in a panic because you're saying they're going to take their home from them, how can they stop it, or what can they do, or how can they even see it coming? Are there certain things that will be going on in your area for you to know that that's what's about to happen?
If you know where to look. Were you going to jump in, John, or was that Michael?
That was Michael. I just want to say, I don't think that the message out of tonight's show should be that if you are in a suburban neighborhood, you should be worried that something disastrous is going to happen to you in any short period of time.
Okay.
You know, the attack on suburbia will come.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not really focused in many places. If you happen to live in suburbia on the outskirts of San Diego and the fires came through and your house burned down, you may not be able to rebuild it. But those are the kinds of issues that people are going to face now. The attack on suburbia will come when the dollar collapses.
Okay. Well, you know,
other problems arise.
It's about to collapse. So that's not very calming, I mean, really, because the dollar's in trouble.
People want to defend their property rights in their area, I mean, it's real subtle. It's very gradual. It's been going on for decades now. Even before 1992, when they authored Agenda 21, UN's been talking about this since the 70s and even before, going back to feudalism. And they're doing it like frog in the boiling pot style, and they already invade most every single major city. And the most important thing you could do is organize yourselves with like-minded individuals who also value their property rights. Educate yourselves about the issues and about the tools that they're using in your local area. Get active, start participating in your local governments and saying no. And just any time that you see fascism rear its ugly heads in the form of public-private partnerships where the government uses public money in order to incentivize or subsidize in any way, whether it's giving away millions of dollars or whether it's giving a interest-free loan, or whether it's cutting sales tax or property tax breaks, if it's a major city, they're going to be furthering Agenda 21 in this regard, and they're going to give deals and cuts to the people that are participating in smart growth, stack them and pack them, public-private partnership, where you don't have a First Amendment, as Michael Shaw and I found out when we went to an Agenda 21 community in Austin, the Domain. We went to do a little interview and a little documentary footage, and we got booted out by some private security. You don't even have a First Amendment there at all, yet they're using public money. So just
we were standing on the sidewalk. We were standing on the corner, and some corporate cop comes up and tells, and we were doing a film, tells us we can't do it. You know, he heard what we were talking about, and we were talking about smart growth, and he just shut us down on the spot. He said, "It's our property. We're throwing you off."
Really?
Yeah. I had that same thing happen when we were trying to get access to a meeting that dealt with transportation issues, and it was by one of these, it's like these quasi-governmental, almost like one of those NGOs, which are the non-governmental organizations that the UN operates under, these bureaucrats. And it was this group of transportation industry companies that team up with government, where the city and the county pay dues to this organization, and they were discussing public business that was going to affect which roads got one of these toll roads slapped on them. And we go to – it was taking place at Valero's headquarters here in San Antonio, and the private security officer would not give us entrance. And I said, but there's taxpayer money that funds your organization that should be – the public should be allowed in to know what you're discussing. And they kicked us out.
Wow. So listen, if you're on the phone lines or if you're listening via the internet or if you're in the chat room, these are the people you want to ask how you do it in your area. This is the panel that you want to ask because they're doing it. We're going to go to the phone lines. Area code 972-742. Good evening, you're on center stage.
Hello.
Hi.
Yes. Just real quick, like, here's the answer. Everybody's talking around here. The answer is to regain our property, 1873 Timber Culture Act, freely homesteaded, 160 acres to, okay. Mm-hmm.
Are you talking to us?
Yes, I am. Hold on. I'm trying to listen to myself. Okay.
Oh, no, no. Oh, I'm sorry. There's a delay if you listen to your computer.
Okay.
You're going to be off by a couple of seconds. So you might mute your computer while you're talking to us because it will just confuse you.
Okay. So let me tell you what the answer is. We need to regain – it's not about jobs. It's about regaining our property. 1873 Timber Culture Act freely homesteaded 160 acres to every citizen.
Mm-hmm.
So – that regains our property. It gets us back to entrepreneurship, good old capitalism, limits our government. We need to just hold the Fifth Article Convention. And what that does is that puts the power of we the people to just carve, slice, dice us back to sensibility. And it has nothing to do with politics. It just has to do with the power of we the people. And it's a very simple thing. Call for the convention. The states call for it. Has nothing to do with politics. It's about the individual, God-given, unalienable, unalienable rights of us to regain our country back. Easy peasy.
Wow. Panel, do you all agree with that?
Well, I think that's a nice sentiment, and it's certainly there certainly is something wrong with the federal ownership and management of lands all across the country, especially here in the West. But I don't think the caller's suggestion really solves the problems, because they run much deeper than that. We are sitting on a internationalist time bomb with our money situation.
Yes,
what
this does, Ron Paul has had these bills in front of Congress. Get rid of the Federal Reserve, get us out of the United Nations, and no more income tax. And he's had these bills sitting in front of Congress for 20 years. Congress will not do it.
When we take Ron Paul's advice, and I'm not saying that we shouldn't, when we take Ron Paul's advice, we will be defaulting on trillions of dollars of debt to foreign countries. Now, the consequences of all that are not going to be as simple as you are suggesting.
That's not true. When we get when the Federal Reserve Bank goes away, we get the gold back in our bank, we're out of debt. We are out of debt overnight. We need to just simplify ourselves, get back to basics, entangling alliances. Ron Paul's three simple bills that have been there, Congress will not pass. So we the people must. We must call for, hold a convention, bail, webcast, worldwide webcast, let everybody in on it, and then we carve, slice, dice us back to sensibility.
Everybody I talk to on the Constitutional Convention uniformly agrees it's a very dangerous idea. You do that.
Yeah, because you guys are afraid. I'm we the people. I'm just we the people. I don't want Congress. I don't want anybody involved. I want just a regular folk. Hello?
Yes.
How about self-governance? Why do we need to rely on another Congress or another constitutional convention? From what I recall, the first Constitutional Convention kind of grew the government. It was more intrusive than the Articles of Confederation. And at this particular moment, I don't have faith in the American people or we the people to stand up and to be able to create a government.
I can't believe you said that. I can't believe you said that.
Have you talked to your neighbors?
Yes, in the grocery store. And I tell them... Okay, here's the issue. When I tell them that the government has stolen 650 million acres from us, they own 900,000 buildings, and Missy, would you rather get up and go to your job as a IRS worker, or would you rather have 1,000 acres of timberland, back to free trade, get up in the morning, yippee, I'm going to my forest, cut a log, slice a plank, sell it to Azerbaijan, or raise some corn or wheat? And my God, we don't have to go in with guns blazing. They're calling us saying, Jen, send me 1 million bushels of corn. Guess what? I write up the invoice. I'm back to the American dream. I have the right to operate as an individual. I own my property. Nobody has any rights over it. The resources are mine. Easy peasy.
Easy peasy, except China is real mad, you know. I mean, I haven't substantiated these things.
I don't care about China. I want my property back. I tell you what, I'm a regular Jill, and I talk to people in the grocery store, and they get it. It's us against them, the elite, the old, we got an oligarchy. Here's the big guy, there's an elite running our country.
You're right
and
about that.
I want to throw it out. Let me tell you something. I'll throw it out on a worldwide webcast where we hold this convention and we get ourselves back to basics.
Well, invite them when you do it because I don't want to hear about it. I don't know what the answer is. Oh, we got to move on, caller. You have any other comments before we move on?
Yes. My last comment is it's just standing. It has nothing to do with organizations joining anything. It's free. You just stand on your individual God-given unalienable rights. We get this little convention call for, we hold it, and we just get back to basics. You know, one nation under God. Easy peasy. So, God bless you guys.
Put your email address in the chat room or send me an email at centerstageradio@yahoo.com.
I love you guys. And, I've been following everybody for years, you know. And you know what? We are going to be A-okay. We're going to get our country back. It's just going to be fine. We will be the leaders again, and yippee.
Thank you, caller. Like I said, I want to keep in touch if you decide to do that webcast, but thank you so much for calling in.
Okay,
area code 281-855. Good evening. You're on Center Stage. Good evening.
Hello.
Hi.
Got me, Carrie?
I got you.
It's Thelma.
Hey, Thelma.
Hey, you know me. I'm all for standing up for individual rights, but a constitutional convention is very dangerous. The country is not ready for it, and it's way too simplifying this Agenda 21 and sustainable development that's attacking this country. It isn't going to be that easy to undo. And so I don't want anybody getting the idea that a constitutional convention is going to clean all this mess up, because it just isn't going to work.
You know, Rick Perry would get himself somehow in front of that convention and leading it with people like Rick Perry.
Exactly. Exactly.
That's funny. Okay. I'm sorry, Thelma. Go ahead with your comment. I'm sorry.
No, that's all right, darling. That's all I wanted to say. I just wanted, you know, I agree with everybody else that you just can't be calling a constitutional convention in the state that this country is in, because it's just too dangerous. It could open up a lot of Pandora boxes that I don't think that caller was really thinking about. We aren't prepared for it. We just aren't prepared for it. It could really do us in bad.
Any top-down chopping up of land, all of the evil people that want to exploit others and use this big monopoly institution that is government, they'll instantly flock towards any type of convention in that regard. That's why I advocate, and Terry and Michael agree, a grassroots, bottom-up shifting. So we all start living in a more free way. We all start, building community together with like-minded individuals, running it out of our local communities, and the thing will fall in on itself. But if you go any type of top-down type of solution, you run the risk of recreating the very problem that you're trying to defeat, in my opinion.
Thank you, Thelma.
You're welcome, darling.
Listen, we're down to our last 10 minutes or 12 minutes with Terry. Terry, you want to give us any thoughts, any final thoughts before you get out of here?
I do, actually. I wanted to talk about another aspect of Agenda 21 on our local level when it comes to roads and streets that you'll see in your community that you need to beat back every time you see it, and it's called the Complete Streets Policies. It is Sustainable Development / Agenda 21, and what they've done here in San Antonio has really enraged people. They're taking, let's say, any old city street, and when they go to restripe or repave a road, they're taking away auto lanes and dedicating them to bikes instead. So, for instance, if you had a two-lane each direction city arterial road, and after they come in and implement the complete streets policy, now you've only got one lane each direction, and now that the lane that used to be for autos is now only for bikes, whereas right now these roads can be used with bikes and autos together because they can use, you know, the bikes can always use the shoulder of these roads. And the other thing they use is they've tried to implement it here in Texas. We thankfully beat it back this session, but I expect it fully to come back in our next legislative session 2 years from now. And that is that they wanted to steal road money, our dedicated road taxes, and commit up to 20% of our road money to implementing and mandating complete streets policies. That means putting in sidewalks, curbs, and bike lanes on every road that uses this pot of money. And, of course, the first thing I brought up to them was, not only is this insane because you tell us that we're so scarce on our road money and don't even make enough money now or collect enough money now to meet the needs, and that's why this is their excuse for selling off our roads to all these foreign entities. Well, it makes no sense to take that money away and give it to bikes that don't pay in. You know, those users don't pay into the road tax. Well, on top of that, they also were going to try and mandate this on even state highways. And to me, it made no sense whatsoever. Who in their right mind is going to want a sidewalk or necessarily dedicated bike lanes on a highway where you're going such high speeds, 60 or more miles per hour? And they didn't have any answers for these things. All they wanted to do was pass this law and force it down everybody's throats and not realize even what the consequences were. You could tell that none of them had thought it through. Well, it turns out that the author of this bill got the copy of the language of this bill from the National Council of Legislators. I forget the exact name for the entity, but they have where they have legislators come from each of the 50 states to this convention on an annual basis, and they hand out all kinds of Agenda 21 initiatives, and that's how they get this stuff implemented. And here we're supposed to be, Texas, the last bastion of land of the free, home of the brave, right? I'm sure people have heard about the Texas spirit, which is true among our people, but it's not true of our government. And they are more than happy to shove big government and Agenda 21 policies down both from the state level and on our local community level. And, in fact, when they brought that bill up here in Texas, they brought up San Antonio as an example because it was already being implemented right under our noses here in San Antonio. And now we're trying to reverse that complete streets policy. And that's happened on several of our major roads, not highways, but on our city streets, where they are taking away auto lanes and dedicating them to bikes and sidewalk pedestrian traffic instead of to autos. This is part of the war on cars and the war on individual freedom and liberty, because they want to herd you into the cities and make you dependent on mass transit.
Well, let me ask a question. I heard Michael Shaw say that both parties are endorsing this.
Yes.
You spoke about Rick Perry earlier. Who in the heck are people going to vote for if both parties are endorsing it?
Well, you've got to worry about is who you vote to the school board,
yes,
who you vote to the fire board and the water board. You know, who do you elect to your city council and your county commissioner levels? Those are the elections that count, because all war is local, and I guarantee you the globalists have launched their global war on every locality in America. The only way to fend it off is to fight back locally. Congress will not save us. These guys are sold out. Both parties are fully endorsing Agenda 21. You got to start from the bottom, and I mean start from the bottom, and build your community's awareness. And when you've recaptured your town and gotten rid of Agenda 21 policy, you know, then you just start spreading out till you finally, if you're in Texas, roll over Austin.
Yes,
and that'll
right.
be a big
and,
job.
You know, there's, when you talk about the local initiatives, Michael, that's exactly true. For road projects, there's the metropolitan planning organizations in every community in our country that has 50,000 people or more. And they're set up by the federal government, and they're supposed to be local elected officials like your county commissioners and your city council members that sit on this board and decide how your state and federal gas tax money gets assigned to local projects. That has been the number one spot that we have had the most trouble, even more than with our Governor Rick Perry, and even more than we've had with our state legislature. It's with our local MPO that's just as dug in, just as stubborn, and, just as intransigent as we've had with all of the other levels of government. And we've tried, and as soon as we kick one of them out, they'll stick another guy on there that's just as bad or even worse than the first guy we knock out.
Okay, let's
so it's a huge battle on all fronts.
Wow. I was about to take a caller, but we've lost that caller. Okay, we're going to go back to the phone line. Okay, if that caller would sit still, I'll come to you. Area code 111, I think that was a block number. If you would go back on the board. I think he was raising his hand a lot to, I guess, make a comment while you were saying that. Okay, we're going to go to area code 111-1111. Good evening. You're on center stage.
Don't tell me that flashing up and down is confusing.
Good evening. How are you?
How are you doing?
I'm good.
I have no doubt that the United States government, or any government, its major ambition is to enslave the people over time. That's the history of mankind. What I'd like to know are the specific clauses and phrases in Agenda 21 that leaps out at people to make it a threat.
Buzzwords.
Huh?
Walkable communities, sustainable communities, complete streets policies, public-private partnerships, community visioning workshops, your comprehensive plans, all of those things. That's where they really get you at the local level is they have these visioning workshops and comprehensive plan type workshops. And your average person, when they hear an announcement like that, just kind of goes, okay, whatever, that sounds pretty innocuous. They don't show up. Well, the people who do show up are all the people who are pro-sustainable development. And then they all ask for, in a very controlled setting by the group's facilitators, to make sure, a lot of times at these meetings, they'll break you up into small groups so that you don't ever have one person at a microphone warning the others of, you know, the blueprint for Agenda 21. They break you up in these small group atmosphere, and you have this little facilitator that writes things down on a whiteboard, and then basically everybody gets to say, oh, yeah, I'd really like to have a more walkable community. That sounds great. I really would like to be able to walk to this over here if I could. And so they get everybody to buy into the Agenda 21 stuff, and then once it's in your comprehensive plan, then it goes on autopilot. It's almost like it doesn't matter what your elected officials know about or try to implement or what have you. Then it's all the bureaucrats who take over at that point. And so those are just some of the words that you can look for to know what
Well, I'm looking at it now, just saying sustainable development, but that points more towards corruption as more so than it does towards language in Agenda 21. Because you can say the same thing about the Constitution or about any other type of document. And yes,
well,
government can take innocuous terms and twist it, but that doesn't mean that the document itself is evil or bad or even wants to lead into that direction. It actually shows the corruption of the bureaucrats.
Well, let's talk about the documents. There's three documents that make up Agenda 21. The first is called Agenda 21. It's 300 pages, and it's about the remake of the world, and including the abolition of private property. The list of what is not sustainable is endless. They list
Is that in the preamble or is that in Section 1?
That is in the second book called the Biodiversity Assessment Report, 1,300-page report. On that report, on page 773, it calls for a reduction of population if the world is to remain industrialized to 1 billion people.
Yep.
Okay, and that's Holden's plan. Is that part of Agenda 21?
Well, the whole White House for 20 years has been dedicated to nothing but Agenda 21. But you can go back to the whole 20th century, and you can see every president has contributed to the globalist makeup, certainly beginning with Woodrow Wilson.
Oh, yeah. Again, that goes back to the corruption of any type of government anywhere through any part of time. But I look
well,
through Agenda 21.
If you've got a document that says that 85% of the human population needs to be vanished,
I don't blame you. Like I said, that's Holden's plan. I'm trying to find out what in Agenda 21 says.
No, what Michael Shaw is speaking of is in the Global Biodiversity Assessment, which is essentially the how-to. It breaks down how to implement Agenda 21 further. And it says, in order to sustain the current standard of living, we would have to reduce the population to 1 billion, or if we could maintain, to have the same population of 6 billion, we would have to dramatically reduce the standard of living to serfdom. And that's right there in an official Agenda 21 United Nations endorsed project. All you got to do is take that one statement and then look at all of the actions that are being carried out by the various governments who have signed on, not in constitutional means, as George H.W. Bush did. He just signed it willy-nilly without a Senate treaty or anything. And then take exactly what they're doing, and you can cross-reference it literally with what's in Agenda 21. And whenever you take those small little tidbits that call for the nastiest possible things, like doing away with public use of the automobile, which is basically doing away with our intrinsic right to travel as free people, you can. It becomes plainly clear that they're carrying this out step by step, and they're slowly but surely marching us towards those ultimate ends, which is either putting us back as serfs, where there's a small elite that rules over us, or reducing the population, keeping the existing standard of living. It's happening. I mean, there's genocide still going on. There's multiple wars of aggression. There's cancer viruses and vaccines, aspartame. And you always find the same individuals, like the Rockefeller Brothers Foundation, for example,
I took a look at, I downloaded some of the transcripts from the committees that back in the 1950s investigated the nonprofits and showed that they were communist infiltrated. The thing is, can you give me that global biodiversity document name again?
Okay, I'm going to pause just a second. Thank you very much, Terry Hall, for your participation tonight.
Thanks so much, y'all. And you can find out more about our fight at texasturf.org. And I leave you to these very competent gentlemen to continue to explain and educate about Agenda 21. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Terry. Okay, y'all, I'm going to come back to you. Second caller, and then we have another caller holding. If you just tuned in, you've come center stage tonight for the topic, Agenda 21, Conspiracy Theory or Real Threat, Part 2. We're talking to Michael Shaw and John Bush. Terry Hall just left the conversation, but she was with us for the first hour. Tonight's segment of Center Stage is being brought to you by African American News and Commentary Blog, your single source for news, events, and commentary that is of unique interest to African Americans. They're located on the web at www.africanamericannewsandcommentary.com. If you're on the phone lines and have a question or a comment, press 1. Or if you're listening in via the Internet, dial us up at 347-850-8390, and again, press 1. Okay, caller, if you would continue. And we lost that caller that was holding. I apologize. We did not mean to hold you that long. If you want to dial back in, we'll take you next. Okay, caller, can you finish your comment?
No, I just wanted to know. I might be there because I looked it up in Google, on Google, Global Biodiversity Assessment, right?
Yeah. Okay. Michael, you can give the details when it was written.
Well, it appeared at the same conference that Agenda 21 was passed. It appeared there as a draft, and it was completed 4 years later, 1996, and published by the Cambridge Publishing Company in Britain. It is the action plan for the environmental movement so as to implement that third E of Agenda 21. And, if you want to read that 1,200-page document, I mean, you'll find little nuggets everywhere. I mean, this, that, and everything else is to be abolished. And, of course, you've got to remember that the UN, as recently as 1976, pronounced at their UN Habitat One conference that private property.
I'm not a fan of the UN or any type of congregation of people.
Okay,
beyond
we got
four. Okay.
Thank you for calling in, though.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Okay. Area code 715, good evening. You're on center stage. Thank you for holding.
Hi, I'm Jerry. I'm Jerry from Eau Claire, Wisconsin.
Yes.
And I was just the other day, I heard an interview with Newt Gingrich where he actually indicated in this plan that he put forth down in Iowa that he was going to sign an executive order to stop the Agenda 21 from proceeding in our country. He said, it wasn't ratified by Congress, and I was shocked to hear that, and I guess I'll believe it when I see it. But then what sparked my interest was the gal earlier was speaking about the Complete Streets program, and I noticed here in Eau Claire that they're redoing the entire business of a state highway. It was a three-lane highway through town, and they made a bypass, and then they converted it down to two lanes both ways with a designated bicycle and pedestrian path. I suppose all of our taxpayer money went to pay for that, and but I'm just observing this taking place, and I live out in the country in a small rural, almost it's the smallest populated township in the state of Wisconsin. And I'm wondering what I can do, at my own township level to put a stop to the comprehensive planning that's attacking the rural property owners. what kind of suggestions would your guests there have for that?
I would recommend targeting some of the low-hanging fruits, the vulnerable aspects of the Agenda 21 plan and how they're carrying it out. And one of their favorite tools is these comprehensive planning meetings using the consensus process. You can tell there's hardcore nitty-gritty Agenda 21 getting carried out whenever they come forward to plan the future of the city, or whenever they have regional mobility authorities, like Terry Hall was speaking of, whether it's transportation or regional land use policy boards, which are largely comprised of unelected officials. One thing that you can do is attending these meetings with like-minded individuals, with property rights advocates, patriots, constitutionalists, anybody that would oppose this form of collectivism and anti-property rights, and show up at these meetings and ask questions. And one thing that you could try to do through the elected offices is do away with any form of planning or any form of governmental implementation that is not directly carried out through the representative process. So in other words, these consensus bodies, these unelected councils, these regional authorities, if you can somehow lobby the local governments and lobby the state governments as well in order to no longer recognize these as governmental bodies, because they're governing, I mean, they're carrying out policy, they're recommending policy that gets carried out, I think that's definitely low-hanging fruit. Outside of that, you can always just talk to your neighbors. Freedomadvocates.org, Michael Shaw's website, got a bunch of really great flyers and handouts. And, you know, a lot of people are concerned about who's going to be the next president. I think the best way to restore freedom to this country is to just get out there and talk to your neighbors. We're really going to have a cultural shift, a return to the ideals of individualism that people used to share and this country used to embody. The best way to do that is a firm handshake and a discussion about the common problems that you're sharing in your community. And more often than not, you'll find that there's a common enemy, and it's United Nations Agenda 21.
Wow. Thank you, Paul.
You know, that comes from a 27-year-old American. So I'm just going to say to those people who just heard that, there is hope.
Amen.
Thank you, caller.
One further statement on that is, I just got an email from one of our local state representatives, and they've introduced a do away with Agenda 21 in the state of Wisconsin, or at least they're authoring a bill to stop Agenda 21 in Wisconsin. So I'm hoping I'm going to get behind them and try to do that. Now, one other question about, are you familiar with a process called coordination?
Yes, I am.
And you find that effective?
Well, coordination gets people focused on an issue that may serve to benefit them. Coordination by itself doesn't get to the core of the problem. Now, the good news is that Fred Kelly Grant and the people at American Stewards are now acknowledging, they've long known, but they're now acknowledging that the center of the battle is over Agenda 21. And so I say, if you want to use coordination as one of your first counteroffensive measures to taking Agenda 21 out of your community in one little piece, then that's fine. But ultimately, the public's got to see the bigger picture, or we're going to be clawed to death by the thousand arms that this lobster has. And so we've got to go for its eyeballs. We've got to recognize Agenda 21. And if that can be done in the process of coordination, then I say go for it, because they have had successes.
Thank you, caller. We're going to go to area code 305, 705. Good evening. You're on center stage. Area code 305, 705. Good evening. You're on center stage.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay. I'm calling from Miami, Florida. And when you were talking about property rights, of course, that hit a big nerve, because we're involved in the Miami land grab down here, which is where essentially they are assaulting the farmers' properties into saying it's a wetlands, and basically charge them tremendous fines and have them still pay their mortgages and taxes, and pretty much essentially take their business away by dropping down the cost of their land until they can't afford to have it. It's like trying to fight the government, saying it's not a wetland, so they say it is. They have no proof. They go onto their private property after they've bought it and declare it a wetlands. And once they say it is, you're in a fight for your life, for your land. And this is happening to about 1,500 different property owners down here. And one lady's left the country. Another guy the other day, he's been fighting and fighting. And they just, it's really, really bad. And I know that Rand Paul had spoken about this to Lou Dobbs about 2 weeks ago about a case in Mississippi where the same type of thing happened, where the local or the feds called it a wetlands, and they don't really have proof of it, and they dragged them to court. In fact, there's a case going, the SACA case is going to the Supreme Court, where once the people had their property, the government came in and said it was a wetlands. After they moved the dirt around, they said, now you've moved the dirt, and if you don't put it back and buy the proper licenses, saying it's a wetlands, you're going to get charged $37,000 a day. $37,000 a day. So now that case, Pacific Legal took it. It's going to the Supreme Court. But this is how they're stealing the private property. Because down here, we have a man in the county clerk who's called Harvey Rubin. And I'm sure that Freedom Advocates, Mr. Shaw, knows who he is, I assume?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So it's really scary down here because we have people just entrenched in the Miami-Dade County local government that are very difficult to fight.
I think Miami-Dade is, Miami-Dade and San Francisco. But then there's Seattle, there's New York. I mean, all these big cities are in bad, bad shape. But certainly Miami has been hit hard. Wetlands have been used there, but it's been used all over the country. It's all part of the process of creating the wildlands. And, of course, you know, the Everglades are deemed wildlands, and so you get people out of there, and all those bordering farmers and the like are being driven off their land. Do you know, I think it's Ms. Fernandez?
Well, my name is Pam Evans, and I've been pretty much, if you look up even on your site, I'm the one who's been pretty much working very closely with them. And like I said, she has left the country because the last...
She
left the country.
Because?
Her son is here because the final court judgment was $316,000 in fees, a 6% interest a year, and the next thing was going to jail.
And this is for a woman who owned her land, who used her land productively, and then got her business shut down because after 100 years it was declared a wetland and that nobody could be there anymore. And so she fought them, and you're telling me the courts labeled her with more money. They took her land, and then they wanted her money so they can throw her in debtor's prison for life?
Well, I mean, once you're in prison, but people pretty much forget about you. I mean, what they claim is when she had her land, and it was, you know how many permits you have to go through, federal permits, state permits, all these different permits. It also involves the Army Corps of Engineers and all these different people. You know, it's your own land. She dug a pond. They said you didn't get the proper permit. And then once they started discussing, they said you need a wetlands permit. There started the fight. She said, well, my land's not a wetlands. Boom, that started the whole fight. So she went through $200,000+ with a lawyer. You know, then she found out the lawyers were also the lawyers for the rock miners, which is another whole story. You know, rock miners down here, they'll let the rock miners go dig a pit.
Well, these are
they
partners.
Credit vintage, right.
You got to have some partners, or you don't have the muscle to make your way through. And, that's a universal thing here in my county. It's a couple of redwood forest landowners who are partners and who get to determine what happens to everybody else's land. That's how the new system works.
Let me ask a question. When they declare your land, I think the term was a wetland, you said?
Correct, uh-huh.
Giving you a fair market value for your land, or are they just kicking
it's
you off?
It's not eminent domain. It's not eminent. What they do is they keep finding you and making you come. If you don't, when you buy a wetlands permit, it's very expensive. And besides a wetland, once you buy it, they can tell you how you can grow crops or whatever it is. And then on top of that, you have to do something called credit mitigation, which means you have to buy pristine land somewhere else, give them money to buy pristine land to mitigate so that you can use this land that they wanted to remain pristine.
So your exercise of your unalienable right to the use and enjoyment of your property is compromised because unless you pay a bunch of fees to the green movement,
you are
put in jail.
Right. And from my understanding,
your property is taken away from you, and that's what's taking down all
whole of America. This is not just a Florida story. But
no, we have a huge concentration, but it's happening. But the only bright, I mean, we've been fighting this for quite a while. It's really heartbreaking. Another gentleman, it's all the same thing, but there's all different complex, you know, stories to each one. And another gentleman, he had put some mulch on his land. They gave him permission. A wildlife officer called after one of the hurricanes. He got permission. The wildlife officer testified they were given permission. The wildlife officer was threatened with his job because he testified under oath. I've sent these things out, these links out, and do you think anyone's paid attention? Not really. But now this poor gentleman, they said, oh, once you put something like that on your land, not only do you have to remove the mulch, they say you must scrape it down to the bedrock and let the weeds grow. I mean, it's insane. But they have the money and the power, and they keep, you know, this poor man is fine. He's 72 years old. This was his retirement property. He used to run horses. And like he said, how can it be a wetlands if I used to have horses on this property? It doesn't work like that. So
well,
the only
what they're doing is re-engineering the peninsula so that they create their little wildland wonderland. And if there happen to have been ranchers on that property or farmers for the last 100 years, they're just going to drive them off. And that's what they're
right.
doing all across the West, all across the U.S. It's part of this wildlands project. And the corner states, Washington, Maine, California, and Florida, are real
right.
big targets.
And what's so sad is that, you know, you have all these officials around, and it's not like they don't know, because we made sure I've gone in and talked to these people, and I said, you know, it's like Cuba. When Castro came in and said, we're taking the land, and you would think the people down there would be more attuned to it, but instead we get people in power who are just, you know, well, there's a law. Well, you know, do something. We do have a task force now, and they're working on it. But meanwhile, they will not put a moratorium on this still happening. The bright spot I saw was when I heard Rand Paul, not Ron Paul, discussing this and said he wants to have a congressional hearing that you cannot have, you know, with some of these people, not our people, just all over the country, and then say we should have legislation that they cannot go on private property without a court order clearly defined, and when they do that, they must show how it's a wetlands. Because down here, they won't even give us documents showing how it's a wetlands. It's just they say it is. And you should know. That was the answer we were given. You should know it's a wetlands because it's been a wetlands.
That's crazy. Well, caller, thank you so much. We got to move mm-hmm. on to the next caller, but thank you so much for calling in tonight. Area code 111, 1111. Good evening, you're on center stage. I'm trying to open your phone line. Good evening, you're on center stage. Area code 111.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, well, I'm not 111, but maybe it's coming that way because I have privacy on my line. Maybe that's what's happening. I'm sorry. Listen, you know, as I was sitting here listening to all this, I have to tell you I'm physically ill over it,
wow.
what's going on, you know, in Florida and all over. And I'm in California. I went to a hearing in Sacramento about a week and a half ago with Congressman McClintock and under the Natural Resources subcommittee, and they took testimony for that. But as I was listening to this, you know, there is a movie out that's called Atlas Shrugged, and they did part one, and they're getting ready to do part two. And I'm thinking, if we all came together and we did a really, really well, good documentary film on this and showed individual impact stories, I mean, across this nation, and explain to the people what this was, what would it take for us to do that? And I'm sure we could get the individuals, I mean, we could send in, you know, $5, $10, whatever it would take till we got it done and we got it done right, and we let the people know that this isn't a conspiracy. This is actually happening, but we need to be able to do it good. It has to be professional. What would it take to do that?
Well, my reaction, John, you want to go first?
Yeah, actually, I work with a nonprofit. It's called the Foundation for a Free Society, and they actually right now are working on a documentary for nullification, 10th Amendment states using their authority to render federal intrusions null and void, which might also be a good solution for some of the problems that the states are having across the country. But they're actually working on that documentary, and I believe the full cost is going to be around $15,000. It's a 501c3. All of the funds are being raised through there. And I had mentioned it to the executive director after this nullification movie, you know, if it's a success, even if it's not a success, this issue is just an issue that needs to get out there. We have a vehicle that we have considered funding, using as a means for a 501c3 nonprofit in order to fund a documentary. I hadn't talked with Michael about it yet, but I'm sure I'd love to have you on board. I'm sure you have ideas for something like that too. But yeah, just really getting out there, going on a road tour across the country and documenting it firsthand, speaking with experts, even speaking with the opposite side, the sustainabilists, which we've already done down here in Central Texas when Michael was down here. I think it would really be a powerful impact, and it doesn't cost but $10,000 to $20,000 to get a really nice hour and a half, professionally done, compelling documentary, which we could then get in the hands of the grassroots and get in the hands of state representatives, and I think it would go well to educate people about this issue.
What would it take to get it into the theaters?
You would not.
Pretty big push. It would take a really big push. You would have to have locals rent out the theaters and play it. I don't think it would be able to be pushed mainstream. We could get it on Amazon, on Netflix. We might be able to get it in the stores on some shelves. But to get it production and play like that, I don't know if it would go in mainstream theaters, perhaps the independent film circuit. But, I mean, it's all about just handing a DVD to your neighbor. That's the best way, in my opinion, to get the message out. We can circumvent this mainstream establishment that's pushing propaganda at the commercials at the beginning of the theater movies these days. I hadn't been to one in a while. They're selling all sorts of BS. There's commercials at the beginning of the movies. All it takes is just somebody. We could even have it open for burning, even, and somebody could burn 100 copies, hit the streets at the next smart growth planning event, and just start waking people up, shaking their hands and talking to them about it.
Yeah, caller, you suggested when you called that this was making you sick, and I'm going to say that's a normal and a healthy reaction. But the answer is not, you'll find, is not that there is a silver bullet that can be done. Oh, if we just, you know, had the right book or had the right movie or had the right presidential candidate. None of those answers are going to bring what ails America today. It's a reawakening of each individual that has to happen. And that only happens when we work one-on-one with our friends, neighbors, and relatives to cause them to understand that we're under real threat. And if we don't do something about it, our lives and our children's lives are going to get worse and worse.
You know, $15,000 to me is nothing. I mean, not to me personally, but I mean, I think we could raise that easily to have that done and to have it done really, really well. And like you say, to burn the DVDs or CDs, whatever it is. Because I have friends who are in Loomis, California. They went to the Chili and Cars event, and they had a table there, and they were talking about this issue. And they were asking people, do you know what sustainability is? And some people said, no, they didn't. Some people said, yeah, I think it's this. And then one of the gals says, do you like to ski? Do you like to drive on paved roads? She says, do you like, do you know anybody who farms or ranches? Do you like to fish? Do you like to hunt? Do you like this? And, well, yeah, of course I do. You know, well, guess what? You're not going to be doing it. And people just started coming around the table and listening to what they had to say. And we made up boards with some of the biodiversity pages that you had on Freedom Advocates, and we had another board that said what this means to you, and we took out the short history of what it was, and people were looking at it and going, oh my gosh. And I think you're right, we have to reach the grassroots, but I think if we target certain demographics, if we target the youth that want to snowboard, those who like to hunt, those who like to fish, and we can do it at events like this, even at county fairs, any event that will allow you to have a table, that we could do that. And if we had a documentary,
that's
brilliant. My gosh.
That's brilliant.
You know.
Maybe what's the guy that does all the documentaries? Maybe if you all got with him, the guy who did the 9/11 documentary, Michael Moore?
he
is a classic Agenda 21-er.
Is he?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Ma'am, if you want to email me, I'd be happy to discuss further with you. And Michael, also, this is an idea that I've had in the back of my head. Maybe we can make 2012 the year that we produce a Agenda 21 documentary. It'll be a great tool to help educate people. But you can contact me at contact at tagtexas.org, Texans for Accountable Government, organization I'm affiliated with. It's tagtexas.org, tagtexas.org. It's contact at tagtexas.org. And
contact at gagtexas.org?
No, I'm sorry, tag, T-A-G, Texas for Accountable Government, T-A-G.
Texas, T-A-G, Texas.org.
Mm-hmm. Tag,
if you,
Texas.
If you want a film that's available now, we'll be posting here in the next day or two a recent speech I gave in Sonoma, California, called...
I was at that one.
The Ultimate War: Globalism versus America, and that, you know, although it's a speaker, it's very concentrated in terms of the delivery of that information. So if you want as short a synopsis of Agenda 21, you know, I would recommend that people go to the web and download that and do with it what they will.
Thank you,
because that will certainly give the information over.
Okay, you know what? While y'all been talking, my switchboard, my chat room, everything is acting crazy. But I'm sure it's probably due to the nature of what we're talking about. So I guess that is somewhat to be expected. Question, how would you describe the nature and the purpose of Agenda 21?
Well, the nature of Agenda 21 is...
Did we lose you?
Loss, you know, the nature of Agenda 21 is to impose on people the loss of the political recognition of your God-given unalienable rights.
Mm-hmm.
The purpose of Agenda 21, the nature of it, is to negate all political recognition that you have a right to life. That's how they can demand a population to be severely restricted, that you have a right to liberty. You don't have a right to liberty. You have a right to be controlled and told what to do, and a right to the use and enjoyment of property. And in fact, they're very clear, private property is to be abolished. We've heard enough stories about that tonight that people ought to have their wariness raised. So, you know, that's what I would describe the nature of Agenda 21 to be. It's rotten to its core because it really strips away from human beings the acknowledgement of why America was the greatest founding of any political entity in history of humankind. It's because our founders recognized that we have certain rights that are natural and that cannot be played with by government. And of course, that's what's happening today. They're playing with our rights.
General Michael Shaw said on his website, "Those who claim to want sustainable development are false environmentalists." Would you agree with that?
Yeah. Actually, one of the tools I use in speaking with the city council and the community here in Austin—it's a largely liberal town. The Democratic Party almost has a total political monopoly on every single local, state, and county seat that's based here in Travis County, which is the city of Austin's in. So one of the tools I've been using is it's actually a Saul Alinsky tool. He was a socialist organizer. Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, they all point to him for a lot of their tactics, and he was pushing communism. But the tactics that he lays out can be adopted by liberty-minded individuals to further the cause of liberty and individualism. And one of those tactics is to use their own rules and use what they say against them. So you have Agenda 21, which calls for the three E's, environment, equity, and economy. And what I've been doing at the city council is demonstrating to them how their sustainable development policies are actually in defiance of the three E's. Now, you got to be careful so you're not actually advocating for these, because many of them are hardcore socialists and collectivists. But, for example, they want to have sustainable development, which means they preserve natural resources for future generations. That's how they define it. But what they're doing in Central Texas and in the state of Texas as a whole is through a lot of these land growth and regional planning and land control policies and boards, they're carrying out Agenda 21 by driving people away from rural areas into urban areas. Additionally, they are incentivizing growth through the use of public monies and public-private partnerships in central Austin and the Austin area. This is of course, to create what's called the Texas Triangle. It's going to be a mega region that they plan to have done by 2050. It's all connected by public transportation. But the point is, in incentivizing all this unnatural growth and driving population unnaturally to Central Texas and the city of Austin, they're having to build a whole new water treatment plant. Many of the environmentalists are up in arms because they think this water treatment plant is going to suck the water out of a lake that's here. And the reason why the city council is expecting and saying they need this water treatment plant is because they expect the population to double in the city of Austin by 2035. The reason it's going to double is because of Agenda 21-style policies. So they're standing up like they're standing for one of the three E's, which is environment, when in reality the policies they're carrying out is actually damaging the environment and anti-sustainable development. Another thing they do to defy equity, social equity, which is essentially egalitarianism, it was a devolution from equality under the law and justice. But again, I like to use their own terms against them. And what they do with their central planning, with their comprehensive plans, is they drive smart growth development by incentivizing mixed-use development, stack 'em and pack 'em, as Michael Shaw says, growth in the poorer sides of town. And what that does is it jacks up the property taxes in the surrounding communities, and it causes low-income families to have to move outside of that area. So they stand up and say that they stand for equity, when in reality they're creating social inequity by taking public monies and pumping them over to the poor side of town to create their smart growth, fancy pants condos with all these fancy retail stores. Again, they're driving out the lower income families, creating inequity. And of course, with the economy, everything they're doing is incentivizing growth that would not have occurred in a natural free market environment. There wouldn't be a fancy smart growth development in multiple places around Austin unless the city incentivized it. And that's evidenced by the fact that they don't exist unless the city incentivizes them in large part in Central Texas. So
well,
let me
jump in. You said several times that they're driving out low-income families. Driving them to where?
Well, the first comprehensive plan in the city of Austin in the mid-20s actually segregated the city. It sent Hispanic and African-American families to the east side of town on the east side of I-35. The second comprehensive plan put industrial use zoning on the east side of town with the minority families. And now the third comprehensive plan, which has got Agenda 21 splashed all over it, they're building it right now, it's creating the smart growth development. So what's happening is these lower-income families that can't afford the increased property taxes are having to move even outside of the city of Austin, sometimes moving out to the extraterritorial jurisdiction or just being displaced from certain areas that they deem their desired growth zones.
I think I've seen that kind of movement, and correct me if I'm wrong, with a lot of the housing projects in cities like Memphis and in Fort Worth, where I saw them move people out of those projects and move them further out?
Well, I mean, there's still a lot of racism, and a lot of the people that are driving this agenda is many of the Western European families. And one of the things that we see happening here in Austin is they're continuing the racial divide that happened with segregation in the city of Austin, and they're using their smart growth and their plan. So one of the things that perhaps they would have in the future would be in certain smart growth areas, it would be the privileged classes or the ones that were buddy-buddy, the partners, as Michael Shaw called them, and they would try to push out other races and minorities and people that can't afford to live in the area because they're not privileged and they're not in with the families that are doing the central planning in that area. Push them out of town.
If you just tuned in, you've come center stage tonight for the topic, Agenda 21, Conspiracy Theory or Real Threat, Part 2. We're talking to Michael Shaw and John Bush. Terry Hall was with us earlier and had to leave after the first hour. Tonight's segment of Center Stage is being brought to you by African American News and Commentary Blog, your single source for news, events, and commentary that is of unique interest to African Americans. They're located on the web at www.africanamericannewsandcommentary.com. Okay, we're down to our last 27 minutes of the show. If you're on the phone lines and have a question or a comment, you need to press 1. Or if you're listening in via the internet, you need to dial us up at 347-850-8390, and again, press 1. a reminder, the chat room is open tonight. However, I'm experiencing technical difficulties on the line, so I cannot look at the chat room right now. I apologize. So if you have a question or a comment, you are going to have to get on the phone lines because the switchboard has been going crazy tonight, and so has my ability to view the chat room. So if you have a question, get on the phone lines and post the question to the panel. Mr. Shaw, I have a question. You said on your website, prepare for the worst, and you gave 4 points. You said destruction of our economy, destruction of our currency, and you said have barter materials, and then you said have access to food and water, and then you said be out of debt. Explain those bullets to us, each of those. What do you mean by that?
If we are to plan for the worst, and that would include something like a economic collapse,
which is inevitable,
all things that are quite imaginable. When I was your age, Carrie, that didn't seem imaginable, even though we'd watch movies like 1984. Mm-hmm. Today we are at a point where that is imaginable. One needs to prepare oneself, and the best way to do that is to have barter. If the dollar becomes wallpaper,
mm-hmm.
how are you going to get what you need? Well, if you've got something you can trade, you're going to have you're going to have some feeling of security in that if things fall apart, you won't be wandering with those who are unprepared.
Example of something to barter with.
If you had foodstuffs, mm-hmm. if you had seeds, if you had precious metals,
ammo,
okay, yeah, things that people will want if the dollar becomes wallpaper.
Okay. So you need those things to barter with, and then you said have access to food and water. For how long of a period of time are we needed to stockpile some food and water? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I think stockpiling makes sense for various reasons because other events can trigger the need to have stockpiled foods. You may have some civil unrest. You might live close to the next Fukushima. Bad things can happen when bad people are in control, and so you want to have access to food. That could mean some canned foods, but I think the best way to have access to food is to have either grow some things yourself. You know, if you're in a suburban lot, instead of a lawn, you can begin to grow fruit trees or grow vegetables. You can become part of a food collective where somebody's growing it and everybody's financing that. And all I suggest there is that you only do that with other people who understand the political economics of our time so that you're all standing together if the worst does come to pass. And then I say get out of debt because, you know, if you understand the monetary system we work under, you know, the globalist banking families that literally have contracts with governments all around the world where they make the money out of thin air and then loan it. So all the money is owed ultimately back. The whole system is based upon debt. So when that system collapses, and history has seen this repeat itself, you know, the fiat money, the funny money made up out of thin air is put into practice, and then the system busts. It busts for one of two reasons, either because nature causes it to bust. You can't have money made out of thin air and have it last because it always inflates its worth right out of existence. But the other way it busts is that the creators of it can use it to bust the situation so they can take control. And if they bust the situation and you're left holding debt, you're now in bad stead with the New World Order because they own you and you do what they want or else. So I think at this point in time, we're late enough in the cycle with funny money that it's just best not to be in debt. Now, there's one debt that's an exception to that in most states, and that would be purchase money mortgage debt. That means when you bought a house, you took out a mortgage on it. That debt doesn't trace you. You can walk away from that debt.
So that debt is a little different than having credit card debt.
Wow. So why should everyone be concerned? So, well, I should say be concerned, well, because everybody should be concerned, the truth, you know. But why should everyone get involved? You know, it seems like to me it's always those just sit back and wait for everybody else to do it, or they say, I'm going to wait until, and then they never really get involved. Why is it reason right now for everyone to get involved?
I would start by taking a look at the people that are currently in positions of power, and not only the president and many of the Congress critters and senators and the local goons at the state and local level, but the people, the puppet string pullers behind the scenes. A lot of these people, again, the Rockefellers, John P. Holdren was mentioned earlier, a lot of their stuff is written down, and the goals that they have, their aspirations, are essentially to rule over everybody. They want to bring us back. A lot of people call it the New World Order. I like to refer to it as the Old World Order. They're essentially trying to return us to a level where there are feudal lords and there are serfs or slaves,
but
you don't have unalienable rights.
Excuse me, John, I'm going to say the difference, though, is that back in the old days, they didn't have that all-seeing eye in the sky. And so what they've been able to do with the American experience is explode technology, and now they have the all-seeing eye, and they can watch you from their satellites. And that's the direction that this New World Order will take, and why it's a little different than the Old World Order.
And what it's trying to do is essentially stop the cycle of revolutions where the masses overthrow their masters and take the seats of power. They're trying to put a cap in that. And the difference between now and all of the rest of the history of civilization is, as Michael said, they do have the technology now to where if they do fulfill their Agenda 21, where we're all stacked and packed, we don't have the right to travel anymore, we don't have the right to own property or the fruits of our labor, you have to ask permission to do just about every single part of living your life, then there may not be a return to freedom and to individual liberty. They might put a stop to the progress of mankind. So I can't think of any more of a reason to get involved with this particular issue. And again, it's frog in the boiling pot. It's gradualism. It may not appear like it's that grandiose whenever you're there participating with the city council. But if you read their documents, which they've published themselves, you can find them on official UN and .gov websites, and the people that are in power author it. They're so proud of it because they think nobody's going to read it. You'll see absolutely how plainly clear it is that that's exactly what they're pushing for. Then you'll begin to see how each one of these little actions moves us one step closer to that end game of either total slavery or a total population reduction down to 1 billion. And we can stop it, but we got to get involved now. We got to kick it up. Even the people that are involved, if you can, kick it up another notch. Shows like this are doing a great job. Michael Shaw's website. But again, the most important thing you could do is sit and talk with your neighbors and prepare yourself. We're investing in silver dimes, which is a wonderful resource. Pre-1965 silver dimes are 90% silver. It's a great way to trade, barter economy, and actually grow communities of safety where you have like-minded individuals who are willing to look out for one another and defend one another, because things are going to get nasty. And the way to defeat it is from the bottom up, just to build local communities based on liberty, and then they'll crumble from the top down.
So someone who may not completely understand what we're talking about tonight, and they may say, well, what's wrong with clean water, clean air, clean food, cleaned off land? So what's the big deal about? How would you explain to them that when they hear it sounding so perfect when they're sitting in a city council meeting, why it's not as it seems?
Well, the clean air and clean water is a legitimate objective for government.
Mm-hmm.
But that can be carried to some nonsense. I mean, Adolf Hitler was the first green ruler in the world. His forest policies before World War II began is what drove the German forest owner out of the forest, as he took over all the policy and used water policy, clean water policy, as his excuse to do it. So today, that experience is being magnified by our federal government and our state agencies and the NGOs that parade around and sue landowners
for nuisance reasons that are all sanctioned and verified by things like the Endangered Species Act. So that the rules are not just about air and water. They're about kangaroo rats. Farmer
so
can't use his land because they found a kangaroo rat there.
We're going to take your land because we're going to turn it into a wetland, or we're going to turn it into a wild forest.
A preserve.
Whatever.
Yeah, a preserve.
A preserve, and you have no say in the matter whatsoever.
Well, the way it's worked, I mean, you know, we have a constitution where I have a say in the matter, but people have to understand that the American Bar Association is an NGO. NGO means non-governmental organization. To get that status, you have to be certified by the United Nations for purposes of implementing Agenda 21. So, you know, I've been to law school. I'll tell you that what they teach you in law school is about legal case law. They don't teach you constitutional principles. They don't teach you about the common law. They teach about statutory authority and case law. Well, gee, after so many years, so many decades and centuries, the case law has run off on its own line. And today, if you can't justify your actions by either a statute or a case authority, you have no rights. The idea of unalienable rights has been forgotten by our judicial system. It's been completely abandoned, and it's no wonder. It's because all of our judges were appointed by Democrat and Republican politicians, and all these politicians have been committed to globalism for a very long time.
So, okay, let me understand you to say. So they come and they say they're going to take my land because they're going to turn it into a prairie or whatever. And so I say, well, no, that's not right. You can't do it. It's mine. And then you say, if I don't have a case to point to say there's an example up in Washington where this happened and they got their land back, then I don't have a leg to stand on. Is that what I'm understanding you to say?
Well, what happens is the government comes in, this case in the state of Washington that the lady from Florida referenced, I think it's called Sackett, the Pacific Legal Foundation has taken on. This is a case where a lady is trying to build her house on a lot that adjoins a river. And her street has 30 other homes that adjoin the river. But her lot was decreed a wetland and told that she'd have to pay $500,000 for this, city lot, $500,000 to study the environmental conditions of this wetland before she could get a permit. So this is the kind of nonsense, back-breaking experiences that landowners all over the country have gone through. I have land in Santa Cruz that's zoned for 30 houses. I've tried for 25 years to build anything. I try to build one house, and they tell me, oh, we need you to agree to a code section that allows the Sierra Club to sue you if we give you a permit because we think there might be a long-toed salamander somewhere on that 75 acres. So
really?
Landowners everywhere simply can't use their property, and so they lose it to banks, they walk away from it, they just give up, and that's happening everywhere where they intend to impose this wildland condition on your landscape.
And tell us again, what part of the country is that looking like? That's everywhere or certain parts of the
everywhere,
country?
There is not a state where that's not the case. The wildlands in New Jersey have been designated, and those people are under the same kind of pressure that almost everybody in Wyoming is under.
Wow. What's the answer? I mean, okay, let's just say in my area there is nothing going on. How does a group get started? I mean, if one person realizes what's going on and wants to inform everybody else, how do they begin?
They begin by learning what this is all about.
We started a grassroots organization, Texans for Accountable Government, and, you know, you just got to start with one person, find two or three other people that are of like mind. Just sit down, state some of your goals, put together a mission. You can come up with a group name to unite behind a common banner, like Jonestown supporters of Jonestown for property rights, or Jonestown against collectivization, or whatever you want. Or if it's a specific issue, like you're fighting some sort of eminent domain or big smart growth development, just give it a common banner. And then you basically just hit the streets. You can make little flyers. You can pass out some of the literature that's already available on other websites. And you start trying to find like-minded individuals. Get yourself a little clipboard where you can write down a name, phone number, email address. And you just get out in the public parks, on the public streets, at the city council meetings, at the neighborhood meetings. If there's any campaigns going on, go quiz the politicians or the candidates, see what where they stand on the issue. Then once you find a few more people, you gather those people together. You start having monthly meetings. You find out what the direction, what the mood of the group is, and you start educating them. And you know, soon enough, you'll find you got 15 to 20 diehard property rights advocates. And with 15 to 20 people, you can really go in and actually make some changes in public policy. And more often than not, you'll find that there's a lot of people, just normal average Joes, that will agree with you, especially when it comes to something as common sense as the right to own property and you know, the right to be free from corporate goons meddling in everyone's affairs and just coming on and stomping on their rights. It's all you got to do is just have someone that's a champion, really. You start with one champion. You grow from there. And even if you end up finding 3 to 5 people that are willing to get active with you, those 3 to 5 people, you can be a major gadfly, just a gnat, just poking at the city establishment, at the county government. And if you bug them enough and if you're persistent enough and you make a big of enough stink, you'll start to slowly shift things and it'll just grow from there. But it just takes someone actually getting out there.
Meters down here, y'all. Anyway, Michael Shaw, John just told us what the do's are. What are the don'ts?
The don'ts are to you have to understand Agenda 21 before you can begin to effectively fight it. Mm. It's very easy to get yourself waylaid in arguments or to do what Glenn Beck did in his final days on his radio show when he called Agenda 21 a left-wing invasion. It is not left-wing. It is just as right-wing as it is left-wing. The reason we haven't heard about it is because both sides of the political spectrum are in on it. And if you don't understand that, you will miss your mark. So you've got to understand the broad dynamic within which it sits, and then you've got to understand its specific goals. Its effort to abolish private property. Its effort to, you know, to raise children to become global citizens rather than U.S. citizens, and it's the whole thrust for technology's use to monitor and control human beings. It's like these new driver's licenses, which have some very dangerous technology that allows government to know everything about you as you walk through a door. And so it's this kind of thing that people need to become conscious of, and you know, and don't be for some elements of Agenda 21 and against other elements. I mean, Agenda 21 is a package that must be fought across the board,
okay,
or they will have you compromised and you will fall on your face.
Good point, Joe. Absolutely good points. Okay, we're down to our last 9 minutes. Okay, John, give us your closing remarks on Agenda 21.
Agenda 21, it's very important to get educated about it, and you'll really see just how infected our everyday lives are with these type of policies. You mentioned earlier, you know, a lot of it is cloaked in do good, and the idea of sustainable development and the idea of being good stewards of the land and the idea of not polluting, these are all good things. But more often than not, you find if you just peel right beneath the surface, you find that there's always going to be some corporate interest. There's always going to be some push to control people or to force people by using government. And government is always guns and force. They force people to do things against their will. Most of these, every single one of these Agenda 21 style policies is always underlined in force. So if someone's saying, hey, well, wait a second, what's the big deal about not sucking off the natural resources in this area, or what's the big deal about closing off this area that's on a marshland? You can just stop and turn to someone and be like, look, I understand what you're saying. We need to be good stewards of the land. We need to protect the environment. We need to be efficient and effective with natural resources. The best way to do that is through the community and through private property, through communities getting together and boycotting corporations that are polluting the rivers. Go stop buying their products. Tell everybody to stop buying their products. Buy from their competitors. The flip side is private property is the best way to have environmental stewardship. Whenever you have public control of resources, nobody cares about it because nobody owns it. It's not theirs. You know, the same way whenever they do tree chopping and whenever they go clear out forests, a lot of times that's publicly controlled, and they say, okay, you can go in and clear out this area. The next corporation can clear this area. We're going to let it grow back, and then you're going to clear this out. And there's not one entity that's privately owning it. Whenever there's one private owner, they're often good stewards. They think about the future profits that they could make if they were to maintain this resource in an effective manner rather than just going willy-nilly. Plus, whenever you use government, you can always let those corporations, they take control. They're the ones that dictate how things happen. They have more power in the political sphere, unfortunately, than the grassroots do. So every single time you see one of these policies come up, it seems on the surface as if they're trying to benefit the environment and trying to do good. Just peel the surface back, you find that it's the same story, government corruption, corporations trying to use this monopoly institution of government to further their own ends. You can always just stop and examine it and say, look, if this is something that we needed to do, we could do it as a community. And again, private property ownership is the best way to solve these problems. And I think the theme emanating tonight, it just all starts with getting out in your community and talking to people about these problems, educating yourself and educating those who you live around, getting involved in the political sphere and pushing it back and putting a stop to it.
Okay. Michael Shaw, closing remarks.
Well, I think mine would be to ask the question that you asked in starting this two-part series, and that is Agenda 21, conspiracy theory or threat, I think is the way you posed it. And all I would say is that the reason the average American hasn't heard about Agenda 21 is simply reflective of the fact that the centralization of power and the centralization of voice has already globalized. They own the medium of expression, whether it's in the schools or in the media. And as a consequence, many people just have not known for two decades about Agenda 21. The time has come when we can't ignore it any longer. Nobody disputes its existence. Nobody will debate me about its importance. And everybody that I know of who's looked at this issue has come away with the same reaction that we've heard from listeners tonight and, you know, that I've seen happen all across the country. When people understand this, it's very, very stressful and debilitating. But I'll tell you what, for those who have difficulty swallowing this pill, just think about this. Are you better off living in a make-believe world where you live like Pollyanna, tomorrow's a beautiful day, regardless of what happens? Or do you want to live in a real world that looks at what's happening today and says, I'm going to prepare myself and I'm going to fight to save the America that I know my ancestors delivered for me? I want to be able to do that for next generations, and I am going to dedicate, you know, what I have to. You know, it's like the Revolutionary War. Citizens would come in, and citizens would have to go back because they got to feed their kids. This isn't something that most people can do full-time all the time, but it's something everybody can do some of the time, part-time. Everybody can take their role in spreading the information and causing a recommitment to the ideals that make America great. And that's simply that we all live in a society where justice is dispensed equally, not socially, equally, and where the economic system is dependent upon free enterprise and private property. And if we commit ourselves to do that and we achieve that, then we will have regained the American tradition where we work and live in the process of improvement.
Wow, that was a mouthful. Thank you all so much. Listen, my guests have been great tonight, Mr. Michael Shaw, Terry Hall, and Mr. John Bush. Michael Shaw can be found at www.freedomadvocates.org. Terry Hall can be found at TexasTurf, that's T-U-R-F.org. And John Bush, will you give him your website?
Yeah, the Political Action Committee is Texans for Accountable Government, tagtexas.org, T-A-G. Texas.org.
Okay. A reminder, the views and opinions of our guests do not necessarily reflect that of Center Stage or the host. Also a reminder, next Friday, that's October 7, 2011, from 8 to 10 p.m. Central Time, we're going to be talking about the Sherrall Thomas shooting, Justified or Homicide, Part 2. A lot of new developments in that case. I suggest you tune in. Also, in closing, again, thank my guests. I'd like to thank the audience for listening. And Mr. Marler asked me to make an announcement, and I just sent him an email and told him he did not put the date on the announcement. So I am not sure what date that announcement was for, so I'm not able to make it. Listen, you all, thank you so much. I've really enjoyed the dialogue tonight. Hope everybody learned something. I sure did. I'll see you guys next time. Bye-bye.